This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Keith Ferrazzi. Keith's the CEO of a company called Ferrazzi Greenlight and the author of two great books. The first, Never Eat Alone, a book he wrote a few years ago about networking and the importance and power of it. And his newest book, Who's Got Your Back, where we talk about creating, and I want to actually read right from the book because I love the way it's written, the secret to finding the three people who will change your life. It's the breakthrough program to build deep, trusting relationships that create success and won't let you fail. I know we all feel like we're not doing everything we can in our lives to be all we can be, and Keith has some great ideas about how to get us all to the next level in that category. So let's welcome him to the show. Hey, Keith.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. And the good news is that doing all we can do to make us more successful is a heck of a lot easier than we've ever imagined.
Nice. All right. Well, tell me, how come it's easier?
Because all the resources that we need are literally just right around us and the people that are there. And it's nothing more than a personal choice to let them in. And we're going to talk on this call and prove that that choice is easier than you've expected and would have ever expected or thought. There really are four principles to letting people in who really can have your back. And an individual that has your back is somebody that, yes, you can let your guard down with. And I know that's tough for people, but we'll come back to that and how it can be easier. An individual that has your back is an individual that really bends over backwards to help you be successful. Is that kind of generous? And the trick to that is you just need to be that kind of generous to other people. The third piece is it's someone who has your back really tells you the truth. And all you've got to do is realize that when the truth is given to you, that it's a generous gift. No matter who it comes from, how it's given, it's a gift. And we can talk about that. And then finally, accountability, which we all know that greatness is inside of us, and we all know that we more than likely deprive ourselves of the greatness that we have inside of us. Sure does help to have a partner pushing us, reminding us, kicking us in the butt when necessary. It's what Jean Nittich learned when she founded Weight Watchers. It's what Bill W. found when he founded AA, that peers can be there for us to hold us accountable for the greatness that we deserve.
So it's interesting because your premise is that you need to get three people, almost for a personal and or professional board of directors, that you enter into a pact with in a way where you're going to hold yourself and they're going to hold you accountable to the goals that you have for your business, for your life.
Yes.
And yet, it's funny. There's almost this, there's like two directions that my brain is going. The first one is that this isn't really networking. This is much more specific than that. So for all of the people that feel like they're not comfortable walking into a room to network, they're not comfortable like handing out, they never bring their business cards. They don't know why anybody would want to talk to them. They're not sure how to give and get in those kinds of relationships or whatever their shyness or lack of self-worth issues are around networking, which seems to be where most people stumble. This is an entirely different and much smaller and more finite and more manageable way to think about connecting. So why don't you compare the two? And easier.
And easier. Mm-hmm. The reason I keep saying and easier is because, look, if I had my druthers and if I had been ready, I would have written the books in reverse order, and that's the way they should be read. You should read Who's Got Your Back first. Because the daunting task of reaching out to strangers who are unsafe and bringing them into your life in the form of a network is tough for a lot of people. And that's what Who's Got Your Back was intended to do, which was for those of us in the world, independent of our networking capabilities, we need a small group of individuals who we can really be ourselves and practice being the humans that we deserve to be. What will begin to occur is that you will begin to have the courage to go broader from that. If you have a small group of individuals that you can let your guard down with a little bit, you'll be able to do it more easily, when meeting somebody and creating more instant intimacy in a networking or cocktail party. If you've got a small group of individuals who really, you learn that people are there to help you and to be generous, you're not going to be as fearful about the broad masses. You know, if you've got a small group of individuals that you really learn to spar with each other and tell each other the truth, when you get your feedback at work, you're not going to be as defensive. So we need that group of three. And by the way, I don't even care, maybe three is daunting to you. Start with one. And then the reason we go with three is because at some point, the formalization of the process, just like showing up to weekly meetings or daily meetings at AA, solidifies the importance and punctuates the importance of the program, so does your three. But right now, just find one person you can let your guard down with a little bit and go have a cup of coffee and say, hey, what's going on in our lives? Let's check in. It's as simple as that. And then that becomes contagious and more rigorous and more routine and more systematic and more strategic. And the next thing you know, you've taken those principles. You've got a weekly group that meets, that it's mutually supportive, and it's a lifeline group. The next thing you know, those same principles and that same person and that courage steps up and goes into a cocktail party, and you meet new people in a way that you've never met anyone before because you're standing on a more solid foundation.
So let's break it down. First of all, I saw a good quote of yours on Twitter. Someone Twittered you saying, it's not how many people are in your Rolodex, it's how many people you can pick up the phone and say, I need help.
Yeah. And that will pick up the phone and call you when they need help.
Now, how do you, let's just say it's one person, two people, or three people, the numbers don't matter, but you're essentially putting together your board of directors or your group, your personal group of people who are going to help you hold yourself accountable and be real about your own foibles and your own opportunities to get to the next level. Where do you go to find this person or these people, and then how do you approach them?
Well, first of all, they're all over the place. They could be sitting in the cubicles next to you at work, but many people say, oh my gosh, I can't possibly find people at work. You don't understand where I work. I got to tell you something. If you can't find one person that you can bring into your confidence in work, then you clearly have the problem, not the work environment. But we can come back to that. You can find a professional coach. It could be a priest. It could be a coach. It could be a therapist if you need to. If you're really that stymied relative to relationships that you can't even imagine reaching out to somebody that's not contractual, you can find them in your churches. You can find them on the bus. You could go to your social networking and begin to find them. I opened a community site called greenlightcommunity.com, Greenlight Community. And the intent there is a group of people who want to commit to helping each other be successful. The only cost of entry is the agreement that everybody there will help other people. And now what happened is organically, and we didn't even foresee this, frankly, the groups are now suborganizing into regional groups and meeting physically on a monthly basis, from which people are finding their lifeline relationships because this is a group of people that already share their core values.
So what about if there's somebody that you would really like as a part of your lifeline group, and they could be instrumental in helping you understand how to take your business to the next level? They could really be what we would have classically thought of as a mentor, someone who's further ahead than you in business, but you're totally intimidated by them and you know they're busy, and why the heck would they want to bother helping you?
They might not.
Well, let's just assume they are, because everybody is. So how do you get the courage?
I disagree. They might be a good mentor. They may not be a good lifeline. Let's distinguish the issues here.
All right, go ahead.
A mentor is somebody who will give you small bites of time, give you advice. They get a lot out of it because they feel they're helping the world and helping somebody. They feel good about themselves. Maybe the mentor will even pick up some tips from you. I mean, a lot of my mentees have turned into my mentors because these individuals are teaching me social networking technology that I wasn't aware of, because they're younger folks and they've been living this more than I have, and I've been learning so much from them. So it ends up being a mutual teaching environment. That is not a lifeline relationship. A lifeline relationship is a commitment where two people dig deep, they dig in, and they say we're not going to let each other fail. A lifeline relationship, at the beginning, it doesn't have to go from nothing to that. But at the beginning, It could literally be, hey, just get together and check in. But at some point, when a lifeline relationship is really a lifeline relationship, it's transparently that. Two people look at each other in the eye and say, we're going to be there for each other. We're going to hold each other accountable. We're going to make sure we tell each other the truth even when we don't want to hear it. And we both agree to forgive in advance when we slip up. We're going to trust our instincts and learn from each other. We're going to help each other. And that's a life, and we're going to let our guards down, and we're going to try as best as we can not to hurt each other when we let our guards down. But sometimes we will, and we're forgiving in advance. That's a lifeline relationship. So the person you mentioned may not be a lifeline relationship. It may be a mentor, which is great.
Got it. So do you think that for lifeline relationships, they are more your peers, or could they be someone who is in a more powerful position or a less powerful position?
Absolutely. I have turned CEOs of Fortune 500 companies into my lifeline relationships. And, you know, these individuals, because I've grown into my own confidence and my own abilities and my own insights, I have then showed up to others in that way. And it's interesting because in the olden days, I still had the insights, but I didn't have the confidence of my insights. And therefore, I didn't show up with those insights. So much of this starts with the spiritual journey. It starts with the spiritual journey of myself to gain courage and motivation to believe in myself so that I believe I've got something to give somebody. And that came with trial and error over time.
You know, that is one of the things that's on your bio that I wanted to ask you about. It's the last sentence of your bio says, Farazi's interests also include an examination of the relationship between leadership success and spirituality. Tell me more about that.
It's a big deal to me because I spent most of my life not feeling grounded and comfortable with Keith Farazi. You can certainly read it in underneath some of the lines of of Never Eat Alone. People used to always say to me, Keith, God, I love your book, but I could never do all of that. And I'm like, yeah, well, you don't have to, which is good. I mean, there's so much stuff in Never Eat Alone that anybody can take a little bit from it and still do so much better than they're doing. But imagine the craziness of the guy who actually did all of that. And, you know, a lot of that was just spurred by my own insecurities. My own insecurities of chasing out ahead of the person that I didn't want to be anymore. I didn't want to be that little poor kid in southwestern Pennsylvania that, that felt like he wasn't worthy of being in those schools. And I've always sought a greater groundedness in my life through spirituality. And as I find it, you know, the Keith Farazi chasing out front slows down a little bit for the little Keith Farazi from southwestern Pennsylvania to catch up to him, and then they can walk together and help each other.
So what at
Sorry,
a spiritual
I didn't mean to sound like Stuart Smalley there.
What at a spiritual level is it that you're invoking in your life to create more confidence and more connectedness with humanity?
Well, meditation's been the most important thing.
And what kind of meditating are you doing?
Vipassana meditation.
Oh, wow. So you're like a hardcore dude sitting there for 10 days?
Yep. Done it many times. And I can't say that I keep my practice on a daily basis. I actually don't. I don't meditate daily. But I know that at any point in my life when anything could be crashing down around me, I know that there's a place that I can go inside of myself and one of those Vipassana meditation centers to really escape to truth, to escape to calm, to escape to a place that's inside of me. And that's there were times in my life that I didn't know that that place existed, and I felt deeply alone. I'm never alone again. I know there's a place I can go. And that's powerful. But also just generosity. The more generous I am, the more I live my life to support and help others, the more grounded I become. The less frenetic my business took a radical transformation in profitability when I stopped worrying about making money and supporting myself and taking care of myself, and I started focusing on making a difference in my clients' and prospects' lives and making a difference in the world. And that all of a sudden transitioned me to a fundamentally different level, and my earnings, my profitability, my business is going so well right now in this ridiculous market. I am hiring left and right. I have openings if anybody would like to apply.
A large part of your success has come from the human connection that you're making with people now that goes beyond just the the business and the making money. Intimacy and connection are really an important part of the tenets of what you teach in both of your books. Getting down to the bones of that person that you're talking to and who they are, what they need, and how you can help them. One of the things that I saw you blog about recently was something you called your RAC, Relationship Action Plan. And I thought that was a really wise piece of advice. Would you give us a quick cover off on that before we head to a break?
Yeah. Well, the Relationship Action Plan, I fundamentally believe that everybody in this call needs to, at first, identify the 25 most important people to the success and joy of your life, and then proactively manage those relationships for deeper levels of intimacy on a week-by-week basis. It's no different than the commitment you have to your own finances, or should have to your own finances. The richness of resources and the people around you deserve to be managed just as tightly.
So what do? You list the 75 people, and then what happens?
Well, then you assign, first of all, you list your goals. And associated with the goals are the people. So you start with the goals. One of my goals is deeper levels of spirituality. As a result, some of the people on my list help bring that to me, just as higher forms of income and clients for Farazi Greenlight, so some of the people are associated with that as well. Then I prioritize A, B, and C. That's important because you can't put the same amount of outreach to the A's, to the B's, to the C's. So you've got to then allocate a certain amount of time and outreach, and there are different types of outreach. There's meetings, there's events, and events is very broadly defined, from parties to dinners to conferences, etc. And then there's my great contribution to the networking world called pinging. There's a whole chapter in the book around Never Eat Alone, but it's just staying on the radar screen. So you assign and allocate outreach with the individuals based on the priority. There's a lot more associated with it, including how do you tap into the ambassadors of your life, and we can talk about that when we come back.
Great. Thank you. All right. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, I want to make sure that we cover your book launch strategy. With Who's Got Your Back, you have a number one bestseller on your hands, which means that you've had some mobilizing of forces both online and offline, and I want to hear that story. And, of course, it wouldn't be Dishy Mix without a little bit of what's happening with Keith Ferrazzi himself, so stay tuned. We're going to thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Renee Stevens, host of Inside Out Weight Loss. If you want to be a thin person, you have to learn how to think like one. Learn how on my weekly show that aligns mind, body, and spirit for lasting change. Find me on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. That's Inside Out Weight Loss, How to Think Like a Thin Person on personallifemedia.com.
We're back with Keith Ferrazzi, author of Who's Got Your Back. And Keith, you've done an amazing job driving that book up to number one bestseller. I think Wall Street Journal and New York Times, is that right?
And Amazon.
Yes. Oh, wow. All right. So tell us the story about how you planned the launch and what you did.
Gosh. Well, it was interesting. The first thing I did was years ago when I went into writing Never Eat Alone. I rigorously interviewed 20 to 30 authors, very successful authors, best-selling authors, to understand what they learned from their book marketing. I actually wrote a very robust marketing plan for Never Eat Alone, which ended up being sold to publishers to train all of their authors. So I decided if I'm going to be in the business, I'm going to know the business better than anybody else who knows the business. And then over the last 5 years, as I was writing the book, I was accumulating best practices on a monthly basis and logging them in what we call our book marketing space shuttle manual. So this thing is pretty vast, and it deals with, yes, online strategies. There are different buckets of online strategies. There's direct campaigns associated with email campaigns. We probably had somewhere close to, in the broadest sense, I know the biggest blast we did was sponsor blast associated with about 1 million emails. But even just for the normal mortal, we had campaigns going out at the 1,000 mark, every day to different people's email blasts. So that was a big chunk of it. I think that was a pretty high return on investment, accumulating all those email lists. The second was the broad, you know, blog sphere, Twitter sphere, that sort of thing. And that was very powerful. Some of it, we actually hired some online PR firms. Don't trust your offline PR firms to do your online PR. Totally different. Plus, myself, I became a very active blogger, very active Twitter. Now I'm addicted, and I love it personally. And you should, everybody on this call should create your community so that no matter what you want to tell the world, what you want to present, whether it's a book or an article or whatever, you've got a group of people anxiously excited to hear it because they already trust and believe in you. Then you go offline, and you've got the typical media, but because of my relationship action plan, I know the most important producers of some of the biggest TV shows. So that's still important. I mean, there's no doubt Today's Show and Good Morning America is important. What's your relationship with the people who lead those, as well as the local papers and the magazines, etc.? So we had a real great PR blast that was pretty significant because of the relationships I had. Not because of the PR firm that I hired, because of the relationships that I had. And then, of course, there was the PR firm that did the broad blast of the media in the world, and that's sort of what we call roundup PR, which gets me the Dallas newspaper and that sort of thing. Then I did something that was truly unique. I began to solicit sponsorships by mutually interested and beneficial corporations who could benefit from my book. And what I did is I said to them, I'm going to come and I'll do a talk at your corporate headquarters. You will buy books at your corporate headquarters for all of your employees. And then when I'm traveling around on this book tour, so let's just make up a company called David's Company in New York. So David's Company in New York, I would go and give a talk at their headquarters. But then when I was talking to Jane's Company in Chicago, that evening in Chicago, I would also do a public talk, open to my fans, open to the public. But interestingly enough, all of the regional people from David's Company that happened to live in Chicago would also come as well. So I was giving for the ability to buy books at home headquarters in New York to David's Company, I was giving them access for all of their employees across the country to any of my public talks. So this was really well orchestrated. I had 5 full-time people traveling with me on the tour. I had 3 full-time people in advance of the tour doing nothing but managing the book marketing. And the funny thing about all of this is it ended up being a significant profit center. In addition to the books, I made a bunch of money on the sponsorships.
So the one that I'm familiar with, I came to see you when you did the University of Phoenix Open Public Forum. Tell me about that one. That was a brilliant move to get the UOP as a sponsor.
They're a brilliant company. And all this goes back to editorial, by the way, which is why you've got to think about this while you're writing your books. The point was that as I was writing my, and you've got to do it in a pristine way if you're going to be a good writer, so you don't go ahead and sell pages for marketing. I discovered the University of Phoenix because they understand peer-to-peer support. They organize all of their classes into small peer-to-peer support groups that commit to each other not to let each other fail the course. It reduces the dropout rate. It extends the learning, the measurable learning, and the sustained learning. And so I wrote about them because I was really proud of an educational institution that was leading any other educational institution that I could find in peer-to-peer support, in the philosophies of who's got your back. Well, in the process, you get to know these folks, and you create the win-wins for their marketing. So here they were sponsoring that evening, and in the process of sponsoring that evening, they got to invite their students, their alumni, and I actively worked to figure out what the win is for them. It's so funny because so many people have approached University of Phoenix and other people to do sponsorships. Sponsorships are crap. I mean, sponsorships are just me wanting to get in your pocket so you can help me. That's not what I create. I create rich, robust opportunities for people who deliver so much more value than the sponsorship that they're paying.
So what was the thing that they wanted?
They wanted to be able to give a huge gift to their students and enable their students. They wanted to give it to their alumni. They also wanted to get to know my network. So my network is very robust, and they sell into corporate training. And their network in corporate training is fairly nascent and new. I was able to open up that whole world of chief learning officers, heads of HR for them in return for them opening up their student body to me to send my message.
Got it. Pick 2 of these people from your blog role on your blog and tell me what you think their single biggest contribution is to us as an opportunity. Here's who's on your blog role. Guy Kawasaki, Marcus Buckingham, Penelope Trunk, Tim Ferriss, Tom Peters, and Tony Robbins. Pick two and tell us why we should learn more about them.
Well, Tony, I think, is a good example, just to go in reverse. A lot of people don't understand Tony. Unless you've seen him lately, you might have preconceived ideas as the guy who is on infomercials. Tony cares deeply, and by the way, has more experience than most of us, if not any of us all put together, relative to really helping people transform their lives. And his science, his technology, his use of both neuro-linguistic program and then all the things that he's perfected since then around it is amazing. When you fill an auditorium and a stadium full of people who are paying a lot of money, and you can charge $65,000 a year for individuals who come to his masterclass, I got to tell you, there's real value there. Give it the respect that it deserves. So that's Tony. You know, Tim Sanders has been an old buddy forever, and he and I are very aligned in our philosophies, and he just gives so much. I mean, his life is focused on, particularly in the online area, he spends so much of his time just, all he does is speak, write, and blog. And as a result, he puts so much time, just like Seth Godin does, into the online world. You get more of these guys in the online world than on most people. I mean, I do a lot online, but I'm also running a business. These guys, this is their business.
Have you ever done the firewalking with Tony?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that so fun?
Yeah.
Love the firewalking. Thank you for that. So a couple of quick questions before we end the show, just more Keith-oriented questions. I'd like to know what you want to be remembered for professionally.
Probably by unleashing personal growth and personal development into the workplace. And the recognition that the workplace can be a place and should be a place to become better humans. And in the process, shareholder value is returned. And by the way, we spend way too much time at work not to make that a place of growth.
I was talking to Monica Broker. She used to run Google's Personal Growth Institute, and she's struck off on her own now. But she made an interesting point that in the 1920s, we didn't, as a culture, really understand the value of daily exercise. And in today's business world, we now have on-site gyms. And she feels that personal growth is the same, that it's just beginning to start being integrated into the business world. I liked the kind of time frame construct of that. What's the axiom by which you live your life?
Lead with generosity.
Oh, that's a good one. We've been talking a lot lately on Dishy Mix about how to benefit from social media with the catchphrase, give to get. And it's exactly the same.
I don't like that.
Why don't you?
I don't like that. It sounds like a balance sheet. That's crass to me.
Uh-huh.
Give to get means you're doing it to get. You do it because it's the right thing. You do it because it brings you joy.
And that's a good point.
You know, I've always, you know, the quid pro quo of give and get, I find gross.
Okay. Hey, I think that's a good point. So if you could change one thing about the business world, what would it be?
I would change the fact that in today's corporate world, business is about people. If you want to sell something to somebody, there's a person on the other end of that that's going to make the decision. If you want to grow and get a raise and get new career opportunities, there's a group of individuals on the other end. All the data shows that team cohesiveness yields higher shareholder value and higher productivity, and yet the corporations spend no time, energy, or money in generating and focusing on relationships in the workplace. It's the bane of my existence. It's the focal point of my mission and my movement, and it's just a matter of time.
So you mentioned earlier in the show that if you had known what you know today, you would have written your two books in the opposite order. You would have started with small group, deep connection, and moved and expanded out to networking. It kind of reminds me of the latest Star Trek movie that J.J. Abrams just did, where he went back to, he did the prequel for Star Trek. Are you going backward? Is your next book going to be the book even before this one? Or what do you have your eye on for the future now?
Well, there's actually four books that are in development right now. I needed to get my head screwed on straight for what business I was in, and it took a few years. Expect a lot more prolific writing to come from me in the next 5 years. Some of them are category specific, like sales. Others are more general, and I'm very excited about what's in store for us. And we've staffed up for it. We've got a huge organization now, very much focused on our users, our community, our movement. It's a real thrill for me right now.
Right now at Ferrazzi Greenlight, you're doing ERM, Executive Relationship Management for sales. You're creating executive communities. You're doing ambassador development. So it kind of seems like it's more where you're moving is more similar to what Marcus Buckingham is doing. Not exactly, obviously, but a lot more of the relationship management within organizations based on people's skills, capabilities, partnerships for putting together groups of people, cross-discipline. Discipline, you know, relationships and things like that.
Relationships have impact on sales. Relationships have impact on teams. Relationships have impact on innovation, because teams with greater levels of relationship centricity and greater safety and comfort can take higher risk. Relationships have impact on so many different aspects of business. That's our focus in training and development and in consulting, both of those areas. But mind you, we're also building a pretty robust consumer business at the same time, which I think is unique. Marcus, you could say, has done a little bit of that with some of his work with Oprah.
Yeah, and his bus tour
in the B2B world.
Well, I think the truth about you, his intent with the truth about you was actually to help, you know, he's got this big thing going out to college campuses now as well,
yep.
Helping kids understand where their talents lie and where their passions lie so that they can get a better, earlier start at finding their way, you know, which I think is admirable.
Yep.
Okay, this is my last question, the one we'll leave everyone with. And that is, Keith, what's the one action that you want us to take?
The one action.
The one action after hearing about everything you said today.
Pick up the phone, call one individual that you feel safe with and you haven't talked to at this level of depth for a while, and say, let's check in. Let's go have a long, slow dinner. Let's go have a cup of coffee. And what I want you to do is I want you to test for whether this person could be the kind of person that eventually could be a lifeline. Is this person someone that you could have candor with? Is this somebody you want to help and they want to help you? Is this somebody? And let your guard down just a little bit. Talk about some hopes, some fears, some struggles, some thoughts, and begin that path that I lay out in Who's Got Your Back. It starts with a phone call or a text or an outreach on Twitter.
Let's start it with a phone call. It's the human way, no matter what all these technologies are, right? Well, thank you for that. And I, for Dishy Mix fans, have a bound galley copy, so one of the very original first copies of Keith's book, Who's Got Your Back. If you go to DishyMixFan.com and post your desire, I will send it to you. So, Keith, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's my favorite thing in the world is networking and connecting. So you definitely always have a home here with me.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thanks so much. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. I hope you have a great day and make that phone call.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.